Welcome to the Steel Study with your hosts, Andrew and Jeremy, where Steelers football comes together with history, education, and flat-out random weirdness. Let the lesson begin.
Welcome to the Steel Study Podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy, here welcoming you to episode number 11 of the Steel Study Podcast, the Chase Claypool episode, second-year receiver. And want to take a moment, as I always do, just to say thank you, extend my gratitude to you for listening to the Steel Study Podcast, the study sessions, following the site. Your support has been phenomenal. And I want to thank you for a record week at the Steel Study, as we've seen our highest number of visits, highest number of views of our articles, listens to the study sessions and the podcast. So thank you so much. It really validates what we do, and we hope to keep that rolling on and going strong. And I hope you have a fantastic, wonderful, relaxing holiday weekend with the 4th of July on the horizon. And just, again, want to reiterate, thank you so much. And want to start this show kind of on a sad note as we say goodbye to Mr. Andrew Malkasian, who has been my partner in crime here on the Steel Study Podcast since April. Andrew has had a cascade of responsibilities come his way and needs to focus and dedicate his time to those responsibilities, which completely understand. But just want to take a moment as I start this podcast just to say thank you so much to Andrew. You know, initially when he and I started talking about starting this site, we didn't know what it would be called. And I told him this had always been a passion of mine to do something Steelers related in terms of a website and a podcast. And Andrew was that person that if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't be here recording the Steel Study Podcast, the study sessions, doing what I'm currently doing if it wasn't for Andrew. So Andrew, I just want to thank you, man. You were the catalyst for getting this thing started. I know it's still very early in the journey, but your encouragement and support has been great. And Andrew, even though he's not going to be a daily, weekly, monthly contributor anymore to the site, he will be a special guest at times. We will have him back here. We will definitely miss his humor. So kind of starting on a sad note, but again, all is good. Andrew, thanks, man. We wish you the best of luck in all you're doing moving forward. So with that said, we got a great episode for you today. Episode number 11, the Chase Claypool episode. And later on in the show, I actually had the opportunity to sit down with Jim Wexel, who has covered the Steelers since 1995. And I'm going to talk more about that interview in a little bit. But he gave his time to talk about his new book, Polamalu, about his experiences covering the Steelers. And I think you're really going to enjoy that. So we do have that for you a little bit later in the show. But before we get to the Wexel interview, just want to kick off the show by going over some news and notes happening with the team. You know, again, at that slow point in the year where there's not a lot surfacing in terms of news regarding the Steelers, but we are drawing ever closer to the start of training camp on July 21st. And at that point, it's just going to be a flood of narratives and stories that we will cover in depth here on the Steel Study. But one point of note I want to make is that the Steelers did sign kicker Sam Sloman. He was a 7th-round pick of the Rams last year, hit on 8 of 11 field goals with a long of 42, jumped around a bit after he was released. I think he finished up the season with the Titans, but he will be coming into camp with the Steelers, and that will give Chris Boswell's leg a rest. This signing should not be interpreted that they're trying to replace Boswell in any way, shape, or form. Again, this is just to distribute those repetitions in camp so that Boswell can stay rested. Last week, there was a report in the DK Sports, Dejan Kovacevic, indicated that Kevin Dotson was apparently not in shape, and that an unnamed source, possibly a coach, indicated that the Steelers weren't happy with his conditioning and how he reported to mandatory minicamp. Since that time, there has been a lot of fan outlash against this report, citing pictures of Dotson and what he's looked like at mandatory minicamp, saying that, you know, by all accounts, the dude looks in shape. It even prompted the individual whom Dotson was training with to post some photos of off-season workouts where he was doing just some ungodly, punishing-looking routines. And if you look at that, and you do look at the conditioning, when you're seeing these videos and pictures of Dotson, you have to wonder whether or not there is any validity to this report. Now, could it be that there has been some difficulty in Dotson picking up the offense, or adjusting to the terminology and what the schemes and concepts are? Maybe he didn't invest enough in the playbook this offseason, potentially. But in terms of him not being in shape, that is questionable based on the photo and video evidence. But it is something, as there are a lot of stories out there, something to pay attention to and to monitor as we move forward to training camp. Also out there with the newly acquired cap space as a result of the release of David DeCastro, there's been some individuals throwing out the question of why not sign Steven Nelson. If you'll remember, Steven Nelson was released a few months ago at cornerback after really two solid years of play opposite Joe Hayden, and now with available cap space, the questions are coming out as to why not use that money to sign Steven Nelson. And one of those writers is John Clayton, Pittsburgh native, saying that Pittsburgh should consider making the move to sign Nelson as he would bolster the cornerback position. But at this point, I don't see that happening. That ship has sailed. The faith has fully been put into Cam Sutton to give him the opportunity to show what he could do opposite Hayden. And to pull the rug out from under him at this point, I just don't believe it's something Steelers management would do. They've given Sutton the time to develop, and they re-upped this contract. They believe in him. They believe he could do it. They're going to give Sutton his opportunity. So I don't anticipate the signing of Steve Nelson. And as I mentioned on an earlier podcast or study session, more than likely, Steven Nelson is holding out holding off of signing a contract until he sees what transpires in training camps across the NFL. Should there be an injury, he will be available and will command a heavier dollar than he will right now when things are at a lull. And then finally, just want to wrap up. Ed Bouchette published his weekly mailbag on The Athletic. And surprisingly, this is the first big name Steelers writer I saw put this out there, but he sees Dwayne Haskins, one of Andrew's favorites, as being the number three quarterback at the conclusion of camp, citing that Dobbs has been given his opportunity before, and that at one point he was traded he was cut but then traded for with the Jaguars, and that he sees Haskins stepping up into that number three spot. So really, this is of some significance because, again, it's the first real Steelers beat writer that has shown that confidence in Haskins. I know that last week, Mark Cabali had said on The Athletic that Haskins' arrow was pointing down following mandatory minicamp. So it's interesting to see this contrasting point of view from one of Cabali's colleagues on The Athletic, Ed Bouchette. So that's a quick wrap-up of what's been happening in Steelers news over the last few days. Again, if you're not listening to the study sessions, please make sure that you're checking in, because we try to give an update daily of what's new and current in the Steelers world. And now we are here at the time when we have our weekly interview. This will definitely, we're going to try to make this the weekly feature of the Still Study podcast. And this week, as I mentioned earlier, we have Mr. Jim Wexel with us. You can find his work at jimwexel.com. Jim was born in Chicago, back in 1960. And I asked, you know, growing up in Chicago, if he still had that Bears fandom, being that he is geographically connected to the area. And you'll have to stay tuned to see what his answer is. But I thought that it was very interesting. Jim's been covering the Steelers since 1995, so a few years after Cowher took over. So he's really had an opportunity to cover this team for an extended period of time. And some of the stories that he shares in the interview, they're just insightful, intriguing, and enjoyable. And I think that you're really going to like them. And then I just want to take an opportunity to promote his new book, Polamalu. Again, you could find that on jimwexel.com. This is the fourth book he's written about the Steelers. I just ordered my copy yesterday, and he's going to personalize it for me, which is super nice, something that's available to all the Still Study podcast listeners when you purchase the book from his website. So please be sure to check it out. And without any further hesitation, please enjoy this interview with Mr. Jim Wexel, author of Polamalu. All right. Well, welcome back to the Still Study podcast. We are honored to have with us today Jim Wexel, author, Steelers writer. If you want to talk about credibility in terms of covering the Steelers, Jim is your guy. And his most recent book, Polamalu, if you don't have it yet, you need to purchase it. Check it out. We're going to talk about that today. But Jim, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy. I appreciate it. I hope I don't scare anybody with my new beard. I notice you've got that. You've got the cool 5 o'clock shadow look going on. I had to go full beard, and I don't even know if I'm as cool as you yet. But.
Well, I tell you what, I try to get something longer, but this is the best that I can come up with. So we're kindred spirits there with the beards. But Jim, just jumping right in here. I know that you're born in Chicago. And being that you cover the Steelers, was just curious, are you a Bears fan, or have you somehow come along to rooting for the Steelers? Where does your fandom reside in terms of the NFL?
Well, being that I'm an objective sports writer, I cannot say I'm a Steelers fan. But I will say that the better they play, the more I get to eat.
That makes a lot of sense.
And, you know, my mentor when I first got into this business, Vic Ketchman, was a great Steelers writer through the 70s, and he hired me in like 1983 out of college, Pitt Greensburg. And he used to complain throughout the entire 80s, man, either really suck or be really good, but this 8-8 is killing all of us. Because you know, the Cleveland Browns on our site at 24/7 Sports, the Cleveland Browns have done great over the years selling, because they're always promoting top five draft picks. You know, even the second rounder is a first round pick. You know, they're
right.
People are, and Cleveland has a better fan base than I think a lot of people realize. Right. But man, you know, covering that 1-15 team is just as, I don't know, lucrative, but you know what I'm saying? There's interest. Eight, people get tired of that easy. You know, it just, so, you know, the Steelers have blessed me that way. But as far as my fandom, you know, I actually stopped being a Bears fan when they fired Ditka. Now, in retrospect, Ditka's coming off like an old crazy coot anymore, and maybe he was when he was fired and deserved to be fired. But that was my final straw. They were settling into mediocrity at the time, and I was just getting in. I think that was 93, and I started covering the Steelers in 95. So I was on the cusp of, you know, you cover a team, you get to know these guys, and you root for them. You want to talk to them when they're in a good mood after the game.
Right.
So you do root for them to win and do well. You really do.
Right.
I know there are some reporters that have real dislike, and it becomes obvious in the press box. You see their reactions to things. Whatever. I can't. But, you know, I will say that I was in Schaumburg, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago. I was visiting from Fort Wayne, or maybe it was Buffalo. We had moved around. And we were back, you know, my family's all in Chicago. And we were with my uncle, my favorite sports uncle, and he had the Steelers game on Franco Harris's immaculate reception. I saw it more than Pittsburgh fans did because it was on in Chicago. It was not on in Pittsburgh. And I rooted for the Steelers. I think America loved Pittsburgh in 1972 because they were a darling. And they weren't just a cutie pie darling. They were a darling that was doing it with physicality, you know, but they weren't well known. So I think they were everybody's second favorite team, at least at that time. And we were all rooting for the Steelers. Who were they playing? The Raiders. Oh, yeah, people like the Raiders too, but you know, the Steelers had everybody's heart that year and they really developed that. So, I mean, I have that in my background, but you know, I'm Dick Butkus running through the Indiana cornfields, knocking down corn stalks. I'm Gail Sayers. I'm Walter Payton, you know?
Right. Well, that's an interesting take on that 72 team. And I know you mentioned that you started covering the Steelers in 95. How have you seen the team change from 95, which I think was Cowher's, was it his third year?
Something like that.
Yeah. So how has the team changed from 95 to present day?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of similarities, but, you know, the ownership for one, you know, Dan Rooney, and I tell people this all the time when they complain about Art Rooney not winning. Art Rooney took over in 2009. We all know when the last championship was. But, you know, even the chief, he didn't win. Dan won. There are special people in this world. And to say, it's like what I keep telling people about the 2000s, Heath Miller, Aaron Smith, Hines Ward, those were special, special people.
Yeah.
And you just can't replace them. And then, I mean, you're not going to replace them and to blame the new coach because they're not doing what they did before. I mean, there are special people that do special things. And when they're gone, you have to find your own way somehow. And, you know, hopefully Art can find a way to get that title. But, you know, Art was raised as a lawyer because Dan knew that's what they needed is in the coming age. They needed more law proficient minds in the organization. And that's how Art, they call him Artie. That's how he was raised. We call him the Deuce, you know, too, because there is an Art Jr. So people get that mixed up. Art Jr. was the scouting guy that built the 70 Steelers.
Right.
And, so, you know, it's more, Art is never going to be Dan as far as Dan wasn't as gregarious as the chief. Dan knew that he couldn't be that gregarious, but I remember when they drafted Plexico Burress and I wasn't sure if Plexico Burress or Chad Pennington was going to be that first pick. And I saw Dan back in the coffee, you know, back then. This is a good example of back then. We could go get our coffee back in the owner's room and you would bump into Dan often at the coffee machine and you'd have little chit chats. And I said, Dan, man, I wasn't sure who you were going to draft. I usually am better at this. I thought you might draft Pennington. He goes, Jim, all you had to do was ask me. Wow. That's how it was then. And then Kevin Colbert came in that year. And I don't know if you remember, you know, Ed Bouchette at the Post-Gazette, and I believe it was a 98 draft, said it's going to come down to Alan Faneca or Jeremy Stott in the first round. Mm-hmm. And they got both. Yeah. That's how free the information flowed. I don't want to discredit Ed. He's a great journalist. But people told stuff like that.
Yeah.
And back in 2000, back when I was starting, I was making friends with scouts. They talked about it because my paper wasn't being read by the entire nation.
Right.
Like Kevin Colbert came and started teaching everybody about the internet. This information goes everywhere, people.
Right.
Stop telling the writers who we're going to draft.
To the disappointment of fans nationwide.
But, you know, the good fans appreciate that. They really don't want everyone to know who they're going to draft.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So, well, I know you have a new book out titled Polamalu. I, in full transparency, have yet to read it, but it is definitely on my summer list. I would like for you just to talk a bit about the book and then, you know, this is your fourth Steelers book. If you can maybe talk a bit about your writing process and how you go about generating ideas.
Oh, well, that's nice. You know, it wasn't always the same process. I read a book called The 5 a.m. Club last June. I got that. And I did start meditating like a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing that. And The 5 a.m. Club talked about getting up at 5 and using the hour of 5 to 6 to meditate, pray, exercise, journal. And so, and it, you break it into blocks. And the first thing is exercise. And I started doing that in June, and he said, it'll start your day perfectly. Your next hour and a half will be your most productive, and your morning should be your most productive. Mm-hmm. So I started writing the book, say, March. And so in June, I get this, and I had added it. I had been doing some of this stuff before, but after that full hour, I would start to write hour and a half, 2 hours every morning. And I just, you got the best of me. However good that book is, it's the best I could do. It's the best I could do. And that's all you can ask of yourself in anything.
Right.
And, you know, those were my best moments of clarity and thought. And I don't know if I'm better now at it, but I love to write in the morning, especially after that. He calls it the sacred hour. And I like that. So I've incorporated a lot of that into my game. Mm-hmm. And I think I wrote a blog entry on my website, jimwexel.com. And let me just throw that in. That's the place I would hope you could buy the book, because I get more of the proceeds. And we're going to, again, do a big marketing campaign to raise money for Polamalu's foundation. And we sent him a big check after last Christmas. And people really wanted to buy and contribute.
Right.
So if you buy off that site, right now we're not doing it, but you get it signed, or you can hit the contact Jim button either after you buy, go back into the site, contact Jim, and you could say, hey, this is for my dad for Christmas. To John, have a great Christmas, or whatever. You know, if you got something you want me to write, or I'll write my own line, but I can personalize it. It does lose value. You cannot sell it back on the open market for more. If I just give the autograph, which is what I do whenever I get jimwexel.com books.
Right.
But at Amazon, you know, they take 30-40%. You get better mailing service, I believe. You won't get the autograph. And Steelers.com sells them too.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's a great personalization, great personal touch. I'll probably be taking advantage of that as well for some of my family members. Are you still there, Jim?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yep.
So just in terms of the Polamalu text, can you talk about what were some of your takeaways from writing about Troy? What did you learn, or what was the primary thing you walked away with maybe saying, wow, I didn't really know this before?
The one thing I didn't know too much about, and I still don't know too much about, and this is going to be, I'm going to try to get him in for a big session in Riverstone Books wants to put something together. Riverstone's in McCandless, and they want to put something together at a theater type and hopefully have Troy. And I'm going to ask, like you asking me to do this.
Yeah.
Doesn't hurt to ask, does it?
No.
And sometimes people say yes.
Right.
So hopefully Troy will say yes. And that will be the focus of my interview. And my daughter wants to collaborate with me on a book, Meditation in Sports. I know Troy meditates, and I know he prays, and we all get that. And what I started to figure out when I started praying, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I was raised a Catholic, not a good one. I think I made it through second grade in Catholic school. And I did go to church when my parents didn't make, you know, I skipped a lot. Let's just say that. And, I'm not the greatest Catholic, but I really didn't know how to pray, and I'm learning still. And so that's what I want to ask Troy. How? What did you do? How did you meditate? Because in the book, it's becoming clear that the praying and the meditating gave him clarity to go along with his, and this is another thing I didn't know, all the tape he watched. Mm-hmm. You know, if you talk to Troy in the locker room about football, he would give you what he had to do. But if I always like to talk to these guys one-on-one without interviewing.
Yeah.
you have to build relationships. Ask about their family. Ask about their college team. That's a great tip for young writers. You know, hey, LSU really got their ass kicked this week. What happened? They miss you, dude. Yeah. You know, and then the guy sees you coming and he knows it's not always, what does he want now? What does he want from me? Sometimes you just want to chat. And right. Troy, who wouldn't want to chat with Troy? He's so interesting. But don't chat football. He does not like, so, you know, he bragged about never watching football. How when he was at home for the holidays, he would go visit and they would put on bowl games. And he would always go in the other room. He just said he would never wanted to sit and watch football. So I was really surprised when I found out how much tape he watched. And Mike Logan goes into this thing about how he followed him around. What is he doing in there? We've already watched all the tape. Well, why is he in there watching more tape? You know, Mike was a little more nervous because he was the guy getting a job taken from.
Right.
So Mike finally found out this guy watches every single angle. He watches tape that offensive linemen and defensive linemen should be watching.
Wow.
That contributed to his knowledge, and that's why he didn't want to talk about it. He was just immersed in it. You couldn't talk at his level. So all the film he watched and all the praying and the meditating, the clarity he received, it all became one, and he could see plays happen before they happened. So and we started, you know, his cousin Brandon talked to me about his early influence. One was Walter Payton, his favorite football player. And two was I'm not even sure, I'm martial arts guy. I don't follow any of that stuff. Yeah. Grayson Rickson or something.
Hoyce Gracie? Was it Hoyce Gracie?
No. Rickson Gracie, maybe.
Rickson
There's
Gracie.
A Gracie family, so you may have one of them.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's in the book. It's right in the book.
Okay.
But that was an early influence in how he put spirit into body, and Troy studied that when he was young. And then Craig Wolfley talked about it as Troy was older, how he reminded him of this Gracie guy. And I said, you know, he studied him when he was younger. Wolfley goes, you know, that makes sense. So Wolfley started talking about mind and spirit in body and how it all can come together and how you can see things happening. So that's what I want to know from Troy more. I want to know more from him.
Yeah.
Because he didn't sit down for me for the book. I mean, 12 years of interviews I have, and he waved everybody, all his friends and family to me. Yeah, call him back. I'm not against the book. He just is too humble to sit down and talk about himself. He just does. There were family members also that weren't righteous to him that I'm sure he didn't want to, A, lie about, because he doesn't lie, and B, didn't want to talk bad about them.
Yeah.
You know, like his dad left them the day he was born for his other family.
Wow.
You know, this book's full of things that all of us don't know because Troy's so private. But I believe Troy's happy with the book. I sent him a book with the check, and his wife called to thank me and said that Paisios, the 12-year-old, is immersed in the book, so none of us have gotten to look at it. Thank you. I didn't know if Troy was going to throw the book away because it's a testament to, you know, I don't know, some kind of idolatry that he would not want in his house.
Right.
Because he's on the cover and it's about him. That kind of stuff. That's not him. So, and that's what made the book even ring more true. If he would have sat down to talk about his humility, well, it's ridiculous.
Right. Right.
I know you have other topics that I could talk about.
No, I mean, that's fascinating. And, you know, just remembering back when Paul Amalu played, he wasn't a very vocal player, or, in, you know, he didn't talk much. Even when interviewed, he was a man of few words. So to find that out about the game film, you know, you hear about all these other players when they're doing all the film study, they talk about it. It's almost like a point of like, hey, look what I'm doing.
Apparently it was nothing like what Troy did.
Right.
And that's, you know, watching all that old line tape for a safety, that's eventually how he got to be so good at diving over the line.
Thinking of those plays where he would leap over and tackle the quarterback before he even handed it off.
It was late when he was doing that kind of regularly. It was late and he hatcheted the quarterback's arm and caused a fumble, and I think he recovered it. I mean, they blew it dead, and the linemen were all backed up. It was all a mess. And they called him offside. And I get in the locker room. I say, "Oh, you finally mistimed one." He goes, "Did I?" I go, "Well, yeah. Everybody stopped. The linemen, you know, they blew it. You got flagged for offsides. So I assume you you mistimed it." He goes, "Did I?" So I went home and I slowed it down one click at a time, and he timed it perfect again. He was never wrong, except he was flagged for it, but they were wrong. He got it. And it should have been a forced fumble and fumble recovery. Who knows, maybe a touchdown.
Right. So it's almost like where preparation and mindfulness come together, and you have a player that transcends the game.
Really. Exactly. I want to know, okay, you're praying. How?
Yeah.
What do you do? It's almost a question that we're embarrassed to ask, because us sinners should all know how to pray, and we all pretend we do if we had to.
Right.
Bless my father and my mother and my brother and sister. Amen. You know, what else you got? I would like to know more about that from him. And I think that's something he wouldn't mind passing along for posterity. And that's what I wanted out of this book.
Right.
It's a template for kids, yeah, boys and girls, and not just athletes. All the things he did right. And you hate to read books about perfect people. You know what I mean? It's so boring. Saints.
Right.
How exciting can this be? Well, Troy was funny. He would play pranks on everybody. He would he won those games, and he would make game-turning plays. What's not interesting about that? So
yeah,
you get all that mixed in with the living right, and you don't need the dirt. You don't need that stuff, because his life is so interesting anyway. And it ran long. It's 430 pages. I included a lot of stuff. This was a great team, and I really wanted that book, and I still want it, and it still could be, that identifies with that great era, the way Gary Kramer's Instant Replay identifies with the Packer era, you know?
Right. Wow. Well, Jim, I know I'm looking forward to digging into that this summer, and our listeners, I'm sure, are as well. And that information related to the Paul Malu book will be posted in the show notes. I'll make sure that I have all that information accessible. But would definitely encourage everybody to check that out. And shifting gears a bit here, Jim, again, just being respectful of your time, looking at 2021, really a period of transition for this team. What is your outlook, your 30,000-foot view of this year's edition of the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Couple of things that you mentioned earlier, I think you're on the right path. The defensive depth is definitely a question. As it is with every team. Every team has depth issues. So it just seems that some of the key positions are a little lacking.
Yeah.
But not yet.
Yeah.
It's the O-line. I guess I'm okay with the tackles. I guess. Of course, the interior has everybody curious right now.
Yeah.
But if you really, and I'm in the middle of writing a column about this today, if you really look at that interior, that has a chance to be excellent. I mean, I know Kendrick Green's going to take a while to take that center job. I can't believe he's going to do what Pouncey did and start the opener.
Right.
Because Pouncey was a longtime college center at a high level. He had a natural feel for the game and what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying Kendrick Green doesn't, but he played guard at Illinois. He didn't play center at national champion Florida.
Right.
So there's going to, and I asked Kendrick in the spring, Pouncey started in the opener, and there was a lot of worry about him not understanding the line calls and what to do exactly. And Kendrick said, "Hey," he didn't say, don't worry. I did the line calls as a guard at Illinois. I can do all." He said, "Huh. I'm just going one day at a time." And I thought, oh, he's submersed.
Yeah.
He's underwater, but at least he's honest. So it's going to take a little time for him. They do have some experienced guys who can play center, but Kendrick's going to be the strong leverage athlete there, you know. And the guards, you know, if Trey Turner's healthy, and we know what Kevin Dotson can do, he's powerful.
Right.
And Trey Turner, those are three really strong players.
Yeah.
Coming together is what we're all going to be waiting and watching.
Early. Right. Right. And, you know, with everything that transpired last week with DeCastro and his relief, his release, and then a report emerged.
Maybe that's what you were thinking.
Definitely. But then a report surfaced last week, too, about Kevin Dotson, apparently a coach, an unnamed coach or unnamed source, saying that the team was unsatisfied with Dotson's preparation, leading into mandatory minicamp. Have you seen any of that, or do you feel like Dotson has prepared and is ready to go?
What I liked about all that is all the people that rushed to have Dotson's back.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the thing we learned is that he is ready.
Yeah. Some of those Instagram posts and videos of him working out are pretty
intense. Wow. Yeah. He's really ready. Yeah. I didn't know he was that ready.
Yeah.
Thanks for the report.
Right.
I don't know what to say about that. I mean, the O-line coaches are brand new. I don't see Adrian Clem going around calling reporters. Chris Morgan, I mean, we haven't had a chance to talk to them one-on-one.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just assuming it came from Ramon Foster, who works with that guy. So,
yeah.
And you know, Ramon might have just asked Pounce. And last year, I remember Mike Tomlin saying that Kevin Dotson is not ready, because we all wanted Kevin Dotson to play. Filer didn't start off well. And right. Does Dotson kid look good in preseason or whatever? I don't know how we knew. But Tomlin was like, he ain't ready. And I don't remember Tomlin ever being that down on a rookie before. So that guy might have had a lot of understanding to grasp.
Yeah.
So maybe there's some of that still lingering. But, I mean, the guy obviously got in shape, and he's determined football player. So.
Right. Yeah, and I know there's going to be – you know, that's going to be critical this year, that offensive line coming together and being cohesive, especially with the new running back, whom everybody's excited about. I guess in terms of looking at Najee Harris, I've said that there's almost like this growing folklore behind him that he's going to be the savior of this team that brings everyone together and makes this a successful season. How do you see it playing out with Harris, and what do you think he brings to the team?
Well, didn't Joe Green once say we didn't win blank until we drafted Harris? He said Franco, but yeah, I mean, I think the folklore – It might be a bit much. I mean, I think somebody in the national media just named him Rookie of the Year or something.
Yeah,
let's let him play a little bit. Let the guy breathe. I mean, let him prove it himself before he has to live up to, you know. But man, he looks the part. He really does. And does. You know, I love when these football junkies, they get out of college and they look around. They're like, I don't have to go to class. You mean going in and watching film is class, lifting weights is class? That's all they ever wanted to do anyway.
Yeah.
Now they're in the classroom of the love just comes, and you know, he is just one of those guys.
Yeah.
So it's all exciting, and when you watch him catch passes, it's very exciting. We haven't seen him break a tackle yet. He looks like he's going to be able to run. He looks more like Le'Veon than I ever expected. I expect him more of a Derrick Henry type, you know. Just what we see from Alabama, and he looked bigger.
Right.
He's lean like Le'Veon was, and tall. He's going to be a help big time. And Ballard just looks just like him too. I don't know. You know, he looks like he's the number two running back, but, you know, Benny Snow will be on fire, and we'll see what McFarland has. I don't know. And the receivers, you know about them, and the tight end Freiermuth looks fantastic.
Oh yeah. I'm definitely excited about him.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And that's what, I mean, if you look at that receiving group, I mean, this may be the deepest class that, Roethlisberger's ever had. I mean, I know some people may make the argument that when AB was here, Martavis, but really it's such a unique combination of skill sets. You have Claypool, who's the big physical combat catch guy. Then you have Deontay Johnson, who's shifty, agile, throwing juju, James Washington, and maybe Ray McLeod having a full season with the team. I think there's reason to be excited about the passing attack too. And then you throw in Harris, who can catch the ball, and then the tight ends. If that O-line can block and protect, you know, it's exciting. But, I mean, that's the big question mark.
How well did the O-line block and protect last year?
Exactly.
When they got off to an 11-0 start.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It can't really be much worse.
Right.
If at all.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
As long as Turner's healthy, you know, because they do need one leader in there, one guy to rally around. I don't know. You know, Banner has that personality, but still, I don't know how many starts he's had. One?
Yes. So, yeah.
I mean, he's got his own stuff to worry about right now. Turner's the kind of guy that can say, look, y'all, you know, and lay down some laws. I mean, even if he's not a big talker, he's still going to be looked upon.
Right.
In the way that Flozell Adams was, to a degree. Yeah. I mean, everybody respected Flozell. There were other guys there, some experienced guys. They just didn't need only Flozell.
Right.
Like it seemed, you know, Dotson and the rookie center, you know, maybe some B.J. Finney. You know, there really isn't that guy there. So a little bit of Banner, but it has to be Turner. The only way he can be a spokesman is if he's healthy. So.
Right. And kind of bring this home, Jim, I have two final questions here. I guess, what do you see as the primary storyline for this team heading into training camp? And then if you could just wrap that up with what's your prediction for the upcoming season? I know it's early, but how do you see the season playing out? Do you see them making the postseason? And just interested in your take on that.
Well, are you looking for a storyline beyond the O-line that we're all
going to talk about? Yeah, if there's anything else hanging out there that you feel, wow, this is really going to tell the story of this season or paint the picture.
Well, you know, just I really don't. I mean, Najee Harris, I think Ben's arm's going to be fine, but that's another storyline. The O-line, you know, is Freiermuth going to pass Ebron? How long? Mm-hmm. You know, will he make Ebron block? You know, these storylines about Ebron taking Freiermuth into the fold and advising him and being some kind of big brother. How about the other way around? About Freiermuth teaching him how to play all around tight end.
Right.
Which isn't going to happen from a rookie, but that's just how I see Ebron.
Yeah.
You know, Devin Bush is back. They really have some studs on defense. You know, Devin, Joe Hayden, Minka, Cam, Stephon. You know, that's like a bunch of pillars that can be a championship defense. Absolutely.
Right.
So that's all I can, you know, and the new O-line coaches and Matt Canada and what he's going to do. Everybody seems excited about him. So I would look at those storylines. And my prediction, I think they're going to be better than what most are predicting.
Okay.
And that's why a lot of media guys root against the team, because they think they're telling some kind of truth, that they're rare in the media by looking down on the team, saying, this is it. You know, I'm not a homer. They're going to win six games. And then they root for them to lose so that their predictions come true. So you get a lot of that. But I think they're going to, you know, contend for the division title. And, you know, they have the pieces.
Yeah.
Whether all those pieces can stay together healthy and whether the O-line can come together will determine whether they can win at all. And I'm not ruling them out from winning at all.
Right. Wow. Well, that would be a heck of a way for Roethlisberger to end his career. And, you know, out of respect for your time, Jim, I just want to thank you for coming on and joining us today. This was a fun conversation for me. Learned a lot. I'm really excited to dig into the Polamalu book. And just real fast before we close, I know you've mentioned where we can find the book, but if you could tell us one more time where we can learn more about your work, where we can follow you, where to find the book, that would be great for the listeners.
Well, I write for a subscription site, Steel City Insider. And SteelCityInsider.net, and it's on the CBS 24/7 Sports Network. we write a lot of free things. I write for Steelers Digest. It's still kicking around. I just did 550 trivia questions for them. They're going to use in some capacity.
Wow.
And they're happy. They said they're happy. And some of my trivia questions were one trivia question I could use an example is, in your opinion, we only have two choices. Mm-hmm. So they're easy. And it's more of a course in Steeler history. In your opinion, what was the greatest Steelers Hall of Fame acceptance speech of all time?
Wow.
And your choices are Jerome Bettis or Jack Lambert.
Ooh.
And the answer is Jack Lambert. So I ask in your opinion, but there's an answer. Wow. So this is the kind of stuff you get from me. You know, I'm not going to just stick with the basics and trivia, but right. That was a fun thing. So I don't know what they're going to do with that. If they're not going to do anything, that's going to be my next book.
Awesome. Yeah.
Great. So, and also I wanted to, this hat, the Jerry Dulac gave it to me, the Jerry Dulac Golf Club, golf show. He gave it to me in minicamp. It's really nice. It's a perfect minicamp hat. And he said, if you can ever promote it, do so. Would you please? So that's what I'm doing.
Wonderful. Great. Well, hey, Jim, so much gratitude to you. Thank you so much. I'm really appreciative that you took the time to sit down with me. And hopefully, you know, as time goes on, we can come back together maybe during the season to talk some more Steelers football. But again, looking forward to reading Polamalu. Listeners, make sure that you order that book. Again, the information is in the show notes. But Jim, thanks again so much.
Thank you, Jeremy. It was really good. Take care. Right.
Have a great day. So we'll see you.
Well, I just want to say again, thanks so much, Jim. If you're listening, I really appreciated the time that you gave to me to sit down and talk Steelers. And wow, how about those stories? Just the personal connection that he had with the Rooneys, how back in the day he was able to go into the coffee room. His story about, you know, who were you going to draft? And Mr. Rooney saying, well, why don't you just ask me? To some of those details about talking to Polamalu in the locker room about timing the snap, and Polamalu asking, are you sure? I mean, that's special to be able to sit down and talk with someone with those connections, that type of knowledge of Steelers players, of the organization. It's eye-opening. It's enjoyable. And again, Jim, we appreciate it and much gratitude to you for sitting down with us. And I would ask listeners, please, follow Jim on his Twitter. We'll include that information in the show notes. Please take the time to purchase the new book, Polamalu. Again, that could be personalized for you. You could find it at jimwexell.com, JIMWEXELL.com. And also, please note that the Jim writes for the Still City Insider for 24/7 Sports. It is a subscription site. Some of the content there is free. But I'll also include the links in the show notes for that as well. But again, grateful to have Jim on. We're going to have him on again here in the future. But just great, great conversation. So thanks so much. And even though Andrew is gone, this is still the Still Study, where we combine Steelers football with history and education and a little bit of flat out random weirdness. We're going to keep that vibe going here. And we do have a history nugget for you today. Did you know that the oldest player to ever rush for 1,000 yards in a season and the oldest player to ever rush for over 200 yards in a game played for the Pittsburgh Steelers? And did you know that he achieved that 1,000-yard season and that 200-yard game at the age of 34? Can you think of who that player was? This individual was born in Louisiana, but curiously, he played his football in Northern California at a place called Pittsburgh High School. Now, how's that for irony? Now, please note that there is no H on Pittsburgh. It's just P-I-T-T-S-B-U-R-G. This individual played for multiple teams, but he played from the Steelers from 1960 to 1965, where he had his most productive years as a player. Again, oldest player with 1,000 rushing yards in a season. But probably what this player is most known for is his blocking, which when you look at his statistics over his time as a running back with the Steelers, they're pretty solid because he finished fourth as the Steelers' fourth all-time leading rusher. But he was known as a vicious, mean, and consistently tough blocker. And in 1987, this former Steelers running back made the Hall of Fame. He was born November 24th, 1929, and died June 3rd, 2011. Do you know the player that I'm talking about? This man is John Henry Johnson. 6,803 yards rushing, 48 rushing touchdowns, 4.3 yards per carry. A Pittsburgh Steelers Hall of Famer, and this week's Still Study History Nugget. If you think about it, the Steelers have one celebrated history of running backs, from Henry Johnson, Franco Harris, Jerome Bettis, Willie Parker, Le'Veon Bell. Yes, I know there's some criticism there due to what transpired off the field, but the guy could run. And now we're on the verge of something new, something fresh with Najee Harris. And maybe, who knows, years from now, we will be celebrating Najee Harris like we do Henry Johnson, Harris, Bettis, Parker. Exciting time to be a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And with that, that is the conclusion of episode 11 of the Still Study podcast. Again, much gratitude to you for reading our work. I guess reading my work on the site, listening to the study sessions, listening to the Still Study podcast. It is much appreciated. Things are just starting to heat up now with training camp so close, and you could count on the Still Study for high quality, in-depth coverage of your team with a unique twist from the historical, educational, and random weirdness perspective. I hope you have an amazing 4th of July weekend. We will be back next week with episode number 12 of the Still Study podcast. Please continue to share our work with your family and friends. It means the world to us. Means the world to me. Drop me a line at thestillstudy@gmail.com and follow the Still Study on Twitter @stillstudy. Have an amazing weekend, folks. Signing out, this is Jeremy, closing episode 11, the Still Study podcast. Peace.